Okay, Yumi.
Thank you. So this paper is about a question raised in response to a pre-ballot draft of the FICE discussion paper. And the question is about classification of non-derivative instrument with specific complex payoff as described in paragraph 5 to 8 of the paper. The board has already discussed how such complex payoff affects the classification of derivative instrument and compound instrument with a liability host. Therefore, this paper is about other type of non-derivative instrument with such complex payoff. When the amount of a claim of an instrument is limited by the entity's available economic resources, applying the gamma approach as discussed by the board today without any further clarification, such non-derivative instrument will be classified as equity as a whole. It raises a question as to how to provide information about the variability in the amount feature. The same issue is today when applying IAS 32, when the issuer entity has the option to settle the claim by delivering a fixed number of shares. However, the classification under the gamma approach focuses on the payoff, which means for some instrument, there could be a change in classification where the upper boundary exists as an automatic trigger, as in the example of mandatorily convertible note in paragraph 26B of the paper. IAS 32 would classify all instruments settled in a variable number of shares as liabilities unless the entity has the option to settle the claim by delivering a fixed number of shares. So in this paper, we explore three potential ways to address the issue. The first one is the separation of embedded derivative, as described in paragraph 32 to 39. Clarifying the embedded derivative requirements would help depict the variability in the amount feature through the recognition and measurement of derivative embedded derivative. But at the same time, we are aware of potential challenges, including the need to develop specific guidance and also the gross-up issue that we discussed in paragraph 39. The second one that we explore is enhancing the indirect obligation, as mentioned in paragraph 42 to 51. It may help address the problem that arises when the equity settlement feature is deep out of the money, including the cross-up issue, but it will also come with challenges that will be quite similar to what the board have discussed when discussing the economic compulsion. Lastly, the paper also explores presentation, such as attribution within equity, that may be able to help provide additional information about the variability in the amount feature. On balance, in the staff view, enhancing the embedded derivative requirement is the preferred solution. As we noted in the paper, the question applies to a set of non-derivative instruments. We said in the paper a limited set of financial instruments to mean a set of very specific features. But however, at this stage, we do not have sufficient information about how big the population of these instruments is and how significant issue this is. So what we are asking from the board today is whether the board agrees with raising this question in the discussion paper. And we set out in the paper what that discussion might look like. At this stage, we are not asking the board to form a preliminary view as to whether to address the issue and how.
Okay, so I'm going to divide my comments into two parts because I reacted quite differently to the paper for two different subsets of the instruments that are covered in the paper. And I'll deal with the easy bit first and then the hard bit second. So the easy bit first. The instruments that can be settled in a fixed number of shares at the issuer's option. So the gold instrument that you've got in the paper and the reverse convertible bond. For those two instruments, I basically agree with what you've suggested in the paper. I agree that they should be equity classified based on gamma, and I would agree that we already have issues with these instruments under 32, which are very similar to the issues that arise under gamma. And I would agree that the different alternatives that you consider are worth exploring in the discussion paper. The only area on those instruments where I think I would probably land slightly differently to the staff, but it's only slightly differently, is on the embedded derivatives. Because I think that if you've got an instrument where it may either be settled in a fixed number of shares or settled in cash, and if it's highly likely that it will end up not being settled in a fixed number of shares, you touch on this in the paper, the fact that you get a significant gross-up. So I would account for that, as proposed with the embedded criteria, by recognising an increase in equity for 100 when I issue the instrument for 100, and then if the right to call those to call those shares back from an accounting perspective, they haven't actually been issued, but the right to call them back from an accounting perspective is very valuable. In addition to the 100 you've booked in equity, you're going to get a big gross-up for the valuable right to call from the issuer's perspective, and so you'll have a big amount sitting in equity, but we actually expect those shares not ever to be issued. And so suddenly, out of nowhere, all of that equity is going to disappear, and I care about the permanence of equity, so I worry about the faithful representation. So in your ultimate question, just say, should we look at the three alternatives, and I agree with that, but you had a slight preference in your summing up for the staff that of the embedded derivatives, I'd want to flag that sort of big disadvantage, I think, of grossing up those equity host instruments because of the permanence of equity type perspective. But other than that, I agree. Where I have a different view to the way that the staff positions it is on the instrument, the third instrument, the mandatory convertible note. So this is an instrument to me which is very different to the first two instruments, and it's very different because for the instrument described, it will definitely be settled in a fixed number, in a variable number of shares in a lot of circumstances. And I think for those instruments, we should think about changing the classification of those instruments, because there's an obligation on the issuer to deliver a variable number of shares, the amount of which is independent from the sort of net asset value of the entity. And the reason why I think that we should look at changing the classification, I'll go through, but maybe it's good to think about an instrument because it makes it more real for the discussion. So this is an instrument where, say I've got a share price of 50, we could have an instrument which in all cases will deliver the same fixed amount of value in a variable number of shares as long as the share price was between, say, $200 and 50 cents. In all of those outcomes, we could deliver 100 worth of shares, and because there's a cap on that instrument, it can't bankrupt the entity. Gamma, as it's described in this paper, would get equity classification, where in just about every foreseeable scenario, you're going to pay value of 100. So the payout is like a debt payout. So I think that we should rather look at that with a debt host in Gamma and look at bifurcation of derivatives out of a debt host for that instrument, because there's an obligation to deliver a variable number of shares, the amount of which is independent from the net asset value of the entity. And I think that's important because if you look at our definition of independence, which is what the board's been using to develop Gamma, this instrument changes in the entity's available economic resources do not result in changes in the amount in the claim. But somehow, because of the way we've come up with this dependence definition, which says such that the amount never exceeds the available economic resources, that's sort of trumping the independence notion that we were working with. And that means that we'll get profoundly different outcomes, I think, from IAS 32 for a whole range of variable share settled instruments, which I don't think we set out to do. I think it really changes the payout logic that underpins Gamma that we've been working on. And also, not my main driver, but a consideration as a former banker, I think anybody who was going to issue something variable share settled that would have been liability classified will now just stick a cap on it and they flip the whole thing to equity classification. So I think it's a structurer's delight. And I actually think it's a, don't even have to be very smart. I think also then that's that concept, this obligation to deliver an amount in shares, the amount of which is independent of changes in the available economic resources of the entity, I think that's actually consistent with the logic of what we were developing in Gamma. So I see it as a better articulation of the words rather than a profound change in the direction that we've been going on and thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right. So when we were drafting this paper, we had reached the equity classification conclusion because we were basing our conclusion on the payoffs. And because of the way the cap is designed, the payoff will be the lower of the fixed number of shares and the independent amount. And that payoff will be the same if the entity had the option to exercise the cap, in which case the instrument will be classified as equity. But having said that, we do see how you could reach a different conclusion as a liability host. And I think that's actually consistent with the with how the gamma treats the conditionality, which was discussed as part of the compound instrument discussion as part of this project. So as part of the compound instrument discussion, the board discussed where if the instrument has an equity settlement outcome and a liability settlement outcome, and that depended on contingent event that is beyond the control of the entity, what the issue entity would do is first identify the liability host component, excluding the effect of any conditionality. And the board discussed the contingent event possibly being the changes in entity's net income, revenue, and other financial ratios. And I think changes in the entity's share price could be another example. So if you apply that logic to this instrument, you could say if the issuer does not have the option to settle with fixed number of shares, the entity has the obligation to deliver a variable number of shares or an independent amount until that trigger is reached. So I think that would also be an alternative way to apply gamma.
The thing that I think really struck me when I read the paper was because of this notion of dependence that we've got, it's taking the focus away from the independence notion that we were working with before and putting the focus on can it ever bankrupt the entity. And that means that now we're getting instruments which have got payouts and, you know, potentially in many circumstances that are either fixed in amount or varying with something that's completely nothing to do with the company's net asset value that are going to get equity classification. And so I don't agree that it's consistent with the payoff concept that we had in Gamma when we were developing it personally.
Amaru?
Texas. Try to understand a little bit what would be the impact of Sue's alternative view on this MCN. So first of all, I agree with the staff recommendation to explore the embedded alternative. Although I foresee, as the staff already identified, some challenges on this. But I think since we are developing a model that's based on the two components or two aspects of in assessing the classification for these instruments, and I think it's the one that is potentially going to provide the best answer for these instruments. As for Sue's comments, I think I have much more of a question, because the way you responded to Sue appears that there are two aspects of assessing these instruments in terms of classification. Sue is focused on the basis of the model on the what we call, I forgot here, the independent of the entity's own resources, and you assess it a little bit differently. So what would be, if you are ready to react, what do you do foresee as the potential, consider this particular instrument, and of course other instruments with similar economics, in terms of applying the gamma approach?
If we were to If we were to apply the alternative classification as described by Sue, this paper and analysis, and including the embedded derivative as a potential solution, would still be relevant for the instrument where the issuer entity has the option. So this analysis will be still applicable to that population, for the mandatorily convertible note or other instrument where the issuer entity does not hold that option, it will be analyzed as having a liability host, and the compound instrument discussion that board has already had will take care of such instruments. And for those, the question raised in this paper will not become an issue.
Does that answer the question?
Yes.
In fact, what will happen is that we will end up having a liability host because of two reasons. You can cut it. We were looking at the control, or as Sue says, with the two factors, which one trumps which. If we say it's the independence which trumps, and then the dependence which you put in within the boundaries doesn't come into play. The way to cut it is make that a liability host, and the rest, as soon as you make it a liability host, the compounds come in, and the accounting follows as a liability plus a separation if we look at it. So that will be the implication.
We'll still have to separate.
Mary?
But the option values would be small in the circumstances where most of the values in the variable, so you don't have the same gross-up challenges as you would going the other way.
But this alternative would be aligned with gamma approach. It's only the other way of reading. This is my point. So we are not going to...
It fits.
I just would like to stress this point.
Absolutely. Mary?
I have a process complaint to make, which is that I don't think you get to call on the star student in this area of FICE again first, because it makes all the rest of us look dumb when we come.
I'm sorry, when you said a process complaint, I was looking, what did we do wrong? That's a fair complaint.
Because I really... This paper was very challenging for me to work through and think about what the implications were of not just the different routes, but why it made me so uncomfortable looking back on gamma. And I think some of it is what Amaro, another star student in this area, has picked up on, which is that we, although we say that gamma has two tests, and you trip either one, the form of settlement, or independent of the resources, we then seem to have brought in this conversely dependency notion, which I was spending some time trying to think about whether that makes me look at anything new. And I think if it's almost becoming a third test, we maybe want to stop and think about exactly how we phrase it and whether it has any unintended consequences, because I kept going back to, I think, paragraph 18 of the paper and trying to make sense, I couldn't make sure that I was really comfortable that I thought through all that. And then the second thing, you say, should we raise this in the paper because we're not sure how frequently these transactions occur? I know that in my former life I didn't see many of them, but I did see at least the cap and floor with very, very significant ramifications. Major market transaction, fundamental questions about the accounting, really big number, all these things. So I think it's real issues, and we should be thinking through to things like this. Maybe not in detail, because it could really, blow people's minds if they tried to wrap their heads around all of the pieces in the discussion paper, but I think it's worth addressing, so I agree with that conclusion of the staff. And I was very relieved to hear Sue's analysis, because it confirmed my significant discomfort with gamma more generally. If we were saying that any time, the way gamma works, any time we insert a fixed exchange ratio cap, we get equity classification. Because, and I was talking about this with Tak, and I was making Tak hold his hands like this and saying that, even if you expect it only to move in the middle of that gap, and so it absolutely behaves like a variable share settle, you'll get equity classification. And that really raised concerns for me about whether our expression of the conditions for Gamma were right, if they would produce that kind of result. And I think some of what Uni was saying, I think I just followed, you know, listening to it now, I think it's very important with these things to kind of see the words and think about how it works. But if there's another way of looking at it where we say the fundamental obligation in this case is the that there's a liability because it's a variable share settle, and then we have to consider what the potential impact of the cap is. Now, there's an exacerbating factor for me, and I think this is just vocabulary. You made the point at the beginning of the paper that these instruments could only be derivative assets, mm-hmm. and that is because the entity controls whether or not the option gets exercised, because they're purchased options rather than written options. And so therefore, they can only be assets that go down to zero in value and not go negative. Okay. But if they're options, then throughout, there was discussion about the entity's obligation is to do X or Y, and their obligation is the lower of, which seems to almost say that they are required to do something that might be, let's say, a cash settlement or a variable share settlement because it is the lesser. And I think we have to be very careful in attaching the word obligation when it is something that remains within the entity's control, because I think that starts fuzzing the clarity of the analysis. So I think we should explore it. I was coming into this discussion very concerned that the model that we had built is written in such a way that as soon as you create some fixed exchange ratio element in an instrument, even if it, you know, it might not be structurally impossible, but even if it's, you know, in the very tail end of possibility, it automatically converts. And that made me say, I think I want to think more about Gamma itself. Uni has maybe tempered that panic on my part with what she explained, but it does make me want to think about how we express not just this scenario, but the whole working of Gamma pretty carefully.
Chung-Woo.
Thank you. Maybe related to Mary's comments, just a clarification. It's difficult to understand, but this paper is a really outstanding paper to analyze all kinds of issues. Just a simple clarification is I just wonder why the indirect obligation cannot be used with the recommendation you suggest here. What I read on your paper is this indirect obligation just applies to separate or eliminate some kind of a deeply out of the money option. So if we, at the first stage, you remove that kind of equity settlement option, then maybe as...
Yeah, but the paper made the point about the difference between structurally impossible,
yes,
and deep out of the money, sure, so unlikely.
Yeah, unlikely. So if we apply this direct indirect obligation approach, then we can remove that kind of equity settlement option. Right, so then we can narrow down a more general financial instrument. Its host is equity, and another thing is a embedded feature. Then apply at the second stage, the approach you suggested, the enhancing equity and embedded derivative approach with a kind of attribution on the presentation of disclosure. So just wondering why you are not offering to think about that possibility of indirect obligation in your recommendation.
Can I just clarify something, Chung-Woo? Are you asking why in the questions,
right,
we're not asking? Because we've already included this discussion of the indirect obligations as part of the pre-ballot. The board's already discussed indirect obligations, and we didn't think there was anything in addition to that that we needed to include in the discussion paper. All we'll do is we'll probably just have some cross-references to that discussion when we talk about some of the issues about deep out-of-the-money options in the embedded derivatives. but we'll make those connections, but there wasn't anything in addition that we'd bring up as part of that discussion. Yeah.
Doc?
Thank you. Let me talk about easier example, which Sue raised. First example, which is the fixed number of shares. Suppose you raise £100, and then you can choose to issue 10 shares, or either you can pay £100 back. And then if the share price is £100, so then 10 shares values 1,000. So then if you go down the path of embedded derivatives, so it's equity host and then derivatives. So equity host is as much as 1,000, whereas the cash you gain is only 100. So then you have a derivative asset, which is 900. The first question is, if we did this accounting entry, so you have to recognize the change of the derivative asset in profit and loss every year. Mm. That's what is going to happen. Okay, then it may significantly, you know, diverse from the reality of the economic substance, because they can pay back only 100, but they have to recognize huge amount of PL volatility. And then my second question is the judgment of which is the host. I think in this case, if we go down, if we use the gamma approach, because entity has a right to issue 10 shares, so therefore it's the host is equity host. But in reality, it should be liability host, because most likely they can pay £100 back. So then if you go down to the liability host, then the volatility of derivative would be much, much smaller. So then that comes to the question of Changgu's questions. So question is, currently the share price is 100. Therefore, in my example, it is very unrealistic transaction. However, we don't know the fluctuation of the share price. So the question is, how can we judge which is the host, and how can we judge it's an indirect obligation, and how can we judge there is no economic substance? So those kind of comprehensive judgment would be necessary. So are you going to discuss such kind of things as well in your discussion paper?
We will certainly discuss the issues that arises from the gross up, and we agree that it is questionable if the equity settlement option is deep out of money and it leads to such a huge gross up. It is questionable whether the resulting information is useful.
Yeah.
But that would be the case if you had issued the shares, and separately if you had purchased the call option.
Yeah.
That would be the accounting. So in a way, we are achieving a consistent accounting between the standalone derivative and the embedded derivative.
Yeah.
But we acknowledge that the gross up will be an issue in terms of the usefulness of the information. So we will discuss those points in the discussion paper and be clear about that is the consequence of separating embedded from an equity host.
But on your host question, I think the answer is that the way that Gamma's developed at the moment, if it's the entity's right, the issuer's right, sorry, to choose share settlement, the host would be an equity host.
Equity.
Right, yeah,
yes.
That's how you
So if we simply follow the gamma, so we judge it with the nature of the transaction rather than fact of the transaction, because if you have two types of transaction, one is you just simply borrow money and you have option to issue 10 shares, fixed number, and then the other one is, as you pointed out, you issue 10 shares first, and then you can the option to pay back. But the economic substance is almost same.
Yeah.
Mm. Almost same. But if you follow the gamma approach, you do not really look at which transaction came first, no. But you only look at the nature of the transaction. That is fine, but sometimes, because we simply look at the nature only, then there is a possibility that unrealistic things may occur, such as a huge number of equity, which is unrealistic. But if we follow simply the nature, then it would be possible.
But at the moment, Gamma yeah. won't do that, because at the moment, without the additional yeah, exactly. suggestions that are being explored in the discussion paper, uh-huh. all that Gamma would do would be show the shares being on issue, in a sense,
yeah,
for, the,
yeah.
for the amount you receive for issuing the instrument, and then the fact that you've got a right to call would be extra information, but it wouldn't affect classification.
Yeah, that's and that would be
it's
true.
It's not causing gross up.
Okay. For the embedded derivatives, for the embedded call options, that would be true. But you'd still get this, and that if we don't do the embedded derivatives, as we discuss in this paper, there would be a difference between the standalone yeah. derivatives and the embedded yeah. derivatives. Yeah. We can close that loop and make that neat and achieve that consistency. But also remember that derivative classification requirement, that's a result of how the board decided to approach the unit of account for derivatives.
Oh,
okay. And because we're classifying the derivative in its entirety, so the same classification approach would apply to the embedded. Okay, so if there was some independent variable, like the gold indexation, it would be end up as a derivative asset. But if it was like a normal fixed-for-fixed derivative, it would just be equity classified.
Mm-hmm. And also, yeah. depending upon the conditions for these things, this could be equity, and the separate presentation requirements will kick in.
Yes, exactly, yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
I understand the P&L side, but the consistency comes in tuck. If you write an option, mm-hmm. that's a derivative, it doesn't meet all the requirements, then that's a P&L.
Yeah. yeah.
Just by embedding it in another instrument, you shouldn't be able to avoid that.
Yeah.
But we understand the gross up, and as Sue's case, it creates a perception issue about permanence and other things, and we will certainly explore that in the DP.
Martin.
I mean, I more or less agree with what the staff is proposing, but my concern is, I mean, really, have we found really the right approach, because man, we have identified now this kind of instruments, which we maybe could come up with different solutions for different kind of instruments. But for me, the issue with this paper was, okay, have we found the right approach? I mean, that was what Sue has said, I think, in her first comment to that. And I'm not the absolute expert of all this kind of stuff, but that was my first question. And why have we not identified this kind of things with the approach further on? And do we have maybe then additional instruments which would also cause this kind of problems? When I reviewed the draft paper, I said, what is the kind of instrument where you have, for example, which is dependent on the economic resources, but only with a very small amount, and you deliver cash of a big amount, which is then, based on our definition, could be classified as equity, which big amount is cash settled. And this kind of structuring things, and question is, because we're doing this project because we want to have more answers based on our approach to difficult instruments. Mm-hmm. And if we now identify more and more instruments, which the approach will not, in the first instance, giving us the right direction, is it equity or liability, then my question is, okay, is that overall the right approach? And I currently say maybe yes, but I'm a little bit nervous, I have to say.
So?
Maybe if I could respond to that. Over the summer, I spent quite a lot of time with the staff throwing weird and wacky instruments at the model to see how it reacted. They enjoyed it, which is what ended up. Some of these ended up in the paper. The mandatory convertible note isn't even weird and wacky. It's just a standard instrument, as Mary said when I worked in.
Standard in your world.
Well, in banking, it was one of the standard products you would always show your clients. So it's not a structured product, it's just a real thing. I think that Gamma does, the concept in Gamma, I think, are the right concepts. But where I think our challenge is, and I think what the... So I'm not concerned about the outcomes we get on the reverse convertible bond and this gold instrument. I think we can explain them in the concepts of gamma, and we're looking at whether we can further improve the information content, but I think the outcomes are explainable and the logic works. I think what the mandatory convertible note shows us is that articulating this concept of independence, which is a great idea, and I think which we all sort of like and agree with, the sort of idea of a payoff which is linked to the performance of the net assets of the entity, I think still is the right approach. But I think this shows how difficult it can be to articulate that in words which are robust enough. And I think you're raising a slightly different point, but I think it's another one that, you know, the staff have enjoyed many hours debating with me, is how independent does independent need to be for you to tick the independence box in the definition? And I think that's, we need to really try and firm some of that up in the drafting of the discussion paper. But nothing in this paper, I don't want to be alarmist, has caused me to think, oh my God, I don't like gamma anymore. But I think it's a good reminder that we need to be really, really crisp and careful with how we articulate this independence concept in particular, because it's such a core foundation of the whole model.
Okay, with these wise words, do we still need to vote on anything? Or,
can I just quickly summarize that? What we have discussed today is that we will explore what is there in this paper, plus the alternative that we discussed here, which is where, in these cases, where it is mandatory and or automatic, as we call it, the actual host instrument will become a liability instrument, i.e. it will become automatically become a compound instrument. So it's a liability host.
Okay, so when you say explore what's in this paper, we're not exploring the alternatives in this paper for mandatory convertible notes.
No, what we're doing is the other way
we'll
around.
We'll move to
for the issuer
debt hosting.
Yeah.
If there's an obligation to deliver a variable number of shares that's independent.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so we'll be exploring, as in this paper, that for the various stuff where the issuer's got the ability yeah. to choose
yeah.
the settlement.
Yeah.
I think what Sue just said, I think, covered the question I was going to ask, because earlier on, not Sue, that said we're going to focus on this for the mandatorily or the automatic convert instruments, and frankly I was still concerned with the instruments that it was. Was getting equity classification on the basis that the entity could at any time not have to wait for the cap to kick in, but say, I choose to settle for the fixed number of shares, even though that fixed number is so far out of the economics of the so that it's behaving like a variable share settle instrument. So were you talking about exploring this alternative analysis only when it's the class of transaction that that automatically kicks in and neither entity has an ability, or are you also talking about exploring it for the variant you also described in this paper, is the entity at any time as the holder of the purchased option can say, let me settle for X number of shares, even if that's significantly out of the money?
What I'd suggested, and maybe the staff can say yes or no, that's what they're planning, was that we make sure that we have a debt host when the entity has an obligation, an unavoidable obligation to deliver a variable number of shares independent of their net asset value, which would be both the mandatory convertible note, where it's an automatic trigger, or an instrument where it can be imposed upon them by the holder. So those were the two categories
yes.
I was thinking of. I wasn't proposing.
For the issuer side, we were not going, as we
if
said
the
in
the issuer can trump with a fixed number of shares. I think gamma would
get
would
you
say
to
equity host.
Yeah, equity host. Because that would be a much bigger change, maybe.
Yeah.
Right,
that
but
would be a much bigger change.
But if, and I'm not sure I'm going to get the numbers right, if in Top's example, trumping with a fixed number of shares meant you had to deliver 1,000 worth.
Subject to the substantive type requirements.
But we've discussed the issuer options before, Mary, when we talked about the indirect obligations as well, and this issue came up. But
the paper says that the only time, you know, indirect obligations kicked in is when it's written into the agreement.
Correct. Yeah,
but
yeah.
The way it's written in, it's a structurally
out of the money.
Never,
no. Yeah, that's. But I'm just saying that we've discussed this before,
yeah.
And the discussion is going to be in the discussion paper.
Okay. I agree with it. I see you're saying that that's a discussion we've already.
We've had the discussion before, and you know the issue is going to be raised in the discussion paper for people to comment on.
I just hear a little voice in me, you know, from the past saying, if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, and this seems to be walking and quacking like a variable share settle instrument.
It's defining the duck, Mary. Define the quack. So no, I was exactly looking at what we would explore is this for the others, but for whether it, how shall I put it, mandatory, but nobody, it's automatic, or it can be imposed upon you to settle in that way. That's when we would say that it's a liability host. Those are the two categories.
And that's going to be closest to IS 32 today.
Yep.
And the issuer option is that would be the same as IS 32 today, so there's not going to be that big of a change there.
Okay.
Okay, everybody.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you.